From the Sri Satya Sai Media Center at Prashanthi Nilayam, you are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Dr. Sai Giridhar. Brother Giridhar, who was born into a Sai family, joined the Sri Satya Sai Higher Secondary School for his 11th standard and later did his bachelor's and master's in chemistry from the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning and, following Swami's instructions, completed his PhD in chemistry. Currently, he is a resident fellow at the Sri Satya Sai Center for Human Values here in Prashanthi Nilayam. This talk was delivered in the Satsang Hall in Prashanthi Nilayam on the 16th of September 2018. With that, over to Dr. Sai Giridhar.
Sarvarupa dharam shantam sarvanamadharam sivam Satchitananda Advaitam Satchitananda Advaitam Satyam Shivam Sundaram. Offering our humble salutations at the lotus feet of our beloved Lord, Sarvarupa Dharam Shantam, who is the substratum of all that we see. He is the perfectly tranquil, silent, unassuming basis of everything that is both seen and unseen. He has assumed all the name and forms by His will, and hence everything is auspicious. But His real nature is Sat Chit Ananda, which means He is simply presence. Sat means that presence which is unchanging in three periods of time. In Deshakala Paristhiti, everything may change. All the drama may happen superficially, but He is the unchanging basis which is the substratum. Bhagwan gives the beautiful analogy of a movie being projected on a white screen. In the movie you have, as per the story, different scenes going on. So there is a scene of war, there is a scene of peace, there is a scene of happiness, there is a scene of sorrow. So the movie has all its vicissitudes that are happening, but all this is happening on the surface, where on the screen, nothing has happened to the screen. There may be a river flowing, or the ocean may be lashing in the video which is going on the screen, but the white screen does not get wet. There may be a forest fire which is shown in the video, in the movie, but the white screen is not burnt. So all the vicissitudes of life we all observe, all the ups and downs that we go through, is all happening on the surface, but there is an absolutely silent, the screen-like presence which is God, which is a substratum of everything, that is a witness to all the drama, that is unchanging. That supreme witness which is God, when aware of itself, knows itself to be bliss. Swami says God is not an embodiment of love or embodiment of bliss. God is bliss, God is love. There is a big difference between the two. God is not an embodiment of bliss. God is bliss. Satchitananda Advaitam. The screen is only one. On that white screen, many movies may be projected, different scenes from different countries, about different people's life will go on the screen, but there is only one screen. Satchitanandam Advaitam Satyam Shivam Sundaram. If our attention is on the screen, then we know that everything is a passing emotion, and we begin to see all the waves of emotions in life as the Leela of the Lord. That doesn't mean that sorrow and happiness will not come in your life. It will come. Why? Because that is the nature of life. Suffering and pleasure, both will alternate. It has to alternate. They will go through. But if your attention is on the screen, then the experience of life becomes Satyam Shivam Sundaram. That is, the whole life looks like the Leela, the sport of the divine. One of the most wonderful Leela avatars of Bhagwan was the avatar of Lord Krishna. In this avatar, Bhagwan would often say that he has mixed the two avatars of Rama and Krishna. He has the strictness of Rama, the poise of Rama. The message and the life of Rama is reflected in Swami's own life. But the underplay of all that he taught us and the way he taught us is the Leela of Krishna. The sweetness and love was the undercurrent. Anybody who has tasted Swami's experience know that love was the fundamental undercurrent. You cannot miss it. Just like how sugar is the ingredient in gulab jamun, in ice cream, in chocolates. Whatever be the sweets that you partake, sugar is the underlying principle that grants that sweetness to whatever be the sweet dish. In the same way, love is Swami's undercurrent. That was his principle. That is his principle. That will be his principle. Because love, as the Atma, as Satchitananda, they are not two different things. They are one and the same. Love is truth. Truth is love. There is no difference between the two, actually. But yes, from human perception, we think that there is truth, there is dharma, there is love, all these are separate. But Swami says, no, they are only different ways of looking at the same thing. Just like how five blind men, people who have blindfolded themselves, were touching the elephant different. Yesterday we saw wonderful chariots for Lord Ganesha, and there were two chariots which were elephants. There was one black elephant, Sai Gita from the primary school, and the central trust had made a white elephant. So the elephant was, you know, approached by five people who were blindfolded. So one was touching the tail, one was touching the trunk, one was touching the leg, one was feeling the body, and they all gave different descriptions, and they were thinking they were talking about different things, but actually they were only from their point of view trying to describe their experience. Whether it is Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema or Ahimsa, it means the same thing. It is the same elephant. Today's topic is living with God every day. This was one of Swami's favorite topics because he said, why do you wait to live with God? Why do you wait to go and have His darshan somewhere? He said, I am with you, in you, around you all the time. So why don't you live with me all the time? I am willing to live with you all the time. I am with you all the time already. So why don't you live with me all the time? Why don't you experience me all the time? The life that Bhagwan has given through the Satyasai system, be it the university, the education program, what he has prescribed for the devotees through the 9-point code of conduct, or what Bhagwan has advised us directly through his discourses or through our personal interactions, the way of life that Swami has advised us automatically ensures we live with God. You don't have to do anything else. Many times students from the hostel, teachers from Swami's hostel would go to Swami and say, Swami, what sadhana we should do? Swami would say, just follow hostel rules, just follow the routine that I have given you, it is enough. Initially, as a young man, I used to take it because Swami has said it, so just take it for granted that yes, Swami has said, let us do it. Eventually, as I grew up, you know, our so-called intellect also blossoms. Then I started wondering, Swami, how is it that if I just follow this routine, you know, great rishis and munis, they do so much penance. Great sadhana they do, and then they, you know, visualize and realize you, and you're saying, just follow your routine, how is that possible? So I began to do one great gift which Bhagavan has conferred on me now, is the Center for Human Values, where he has posted us. In the Center for Human Values, our work is to research Swami's teachings. So as I was diving deep into his teachings, I took the human value of prema to start with. And it has been an adventurous and greatly inspiring journey to go through Swami's literature. That is why even in the 9-point code of conduct, Swami said daily reading of Swami's literature. It is a must. Now reading means not merely reading, but Bhagavan says, Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. Here, you read, that is, how is it Shravanam? When you read, you listen to what you are reading in your own mind. Then Mananam, you run it through your mind again and again. It's important that we run it through our mind again and again. And why? Somebody asked this very great Vedantic master of our hallowed nation, Bharat, Swami Chinmayananda, who was single-handedly responsible in a great way to uplift the study of Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads, especially in the English language, because traditionally it was done in Sanskrit and sometimes in the local languages, but to reach it out to the intellectuals of the country and world abroad, Swami Chinmayananji started speaking about it and expounding on it in the English language. So somebody asked Swami Chinmayananda, Swamiji, I have read all Bhagavad Gita. I know all the shlokas by heart. I have gone through the Bhagavad Gita, but I don't seem to be benefiting greatly from it. What is the reason? Swami Chinmayananda had a wonderful sense of humor. He said, yes, you went through Bhagavad Gita, but Bhagavad Gita did not go through you. Which means, you know, like how we do in most cases, ek kaan se suno, dusre kaan se chhod do. Beech mein manan nahi. Means listen through one ear and let it go through the other ear. In between the brain and the mind is there, no work there. So direct entry and exit. So Swami Chinmayananji had asked that disciple, did Bhagavad Gita go through you? You went through Bhagavad Gita, fine. Oh, you know all the Upanishads, very good. You have heard all the talks about all Upanishads, very great. You have gone through all the Gita shlokas and the Upanishads, but have the Gita shloka and the Upanishads gone through you? Which means what? There has to be a process of manana. Manana means proper understanding by constantly reflecting on it. How do you reflect? Not by taking for granted what the commentator is saying. You listen to what is being said, apply it to your own life. You know, there are 4 types of listeners. First type of listener is called Sota. Actually, the Hindi term for listener is Shrota. Shrota means one who listens. Like the Vedas were originally called Shrutis. Shruti means that which was passed on by the tradition of speaking and listening. There was no written text called Vedas. Today, because the tradition is not sound enough and there are no good listeners, so that is why it has been written down now. Okay, even if you forget, let it be there, let it be documented in some way. So all the Vedas, the Bhagavad Gita, everything. See, Gita is also a song. You don't write a song, you sing a song, isn't it? Bhagavad Gita, the song of the Lord Divine, is a Gita. Gita means song. Song is sung. It is a vibration, it's a reverberation. Means what? Our life should reverberate that song. Our action should reverberate that song. The song should be sung through our life. That is when the Gita has really gone through our life. Otherwise, there are so many people in this world who have read all the Upanishads, all the Gita. But Swamiji's question to them was, has Gita gone through you? Have the Upanishads gone through you? Which means what? Is your life a reflection of Bhagavad Gita? Is it a reflection of the Upanishads? Is it a reflection of Bhagavatam? Is it a reflection of Ramayana? This is the question that the masters are asking. So Shrota, the first type of listener, though it is usually called Shrota in Hindi or Sanskrit, the first type of listener is not Shrota, he is Sota. Sota means soundly asleep. How does he do? He listens to the speaker or he is reading the content in a book, and as he is listening or he is reading, means he is Sota. Means he is sleeping, he is not assimilating anything. That is the first type of listener. Second type of listener is Sarota. Sarota means, the Hindi knowing people, especially from the rural background, you know that there is this nutcracker which is called Sarota. You know, you have the nutcrackers. So what it does is, it cuts the nut into layers, into pieces, slices. What this Sarota does, he listens to a great master, he listens to Swami's discourses, or he listens to a Mahatma's talk, and he says, what is this person saying? I know more than him. You know, in this book I have read, this is only limited content. That book which I have read and I know, he will decimate the master's teaching and say, this master, no, very simplistic teachings. Swami will tell, help ever, hurt never. Follow hostel schedule, it's enough. But the Sarota will decimate, means he will desiccate every word and say, not much value in this. What will you do? Help ever, hurt never. What is this? Is it possible? No, there are deeper philosophies in the Brahma Sutras and Upanishads. I know that I have read all these things. So that is Sarota, second type of listener. The third type of listener, Shrota, he listens. But why he listens? So that he can communicate it to his friends. Not for him to understand and practice, no. He listens so he can tell others. Do you know, today I heard a talk. It's a famous trend today. You will see, there are so many messages you get on WhatsApp, on internet, through Facebook. Most people, what they do? They are interested in the WhatsApp message. Very wonderful messages come. Positive attitude messages, messages on small shlokas of Bhagavad Gita, what not. Swami's discourse clippings also they come. But they get that message. They are very, very happy to receive the message. Why? Now they can forward it to 10 friends. And say, today I have sent you. And with not only forward, after that they will write, I have sent you a wonderful message, please read. Which they themselves have not read. So this is the Shrota. Means he is not criticizing the speaker or the master who has given the teaching, but he listens carefully. But the intention here of listening is for his own glory. Why? I will tell 10 people about it. It will not benefit him in any way. All these three types of listeners are useless to the master. He doesn't like them. He says, I am all the time looking for the real Shrota. Who is the real Shrota? He listens to the master. He does Shravanam, that is, listens to the master. Then he does Mananam. Mananam means he takes it in, understands his own life experiences. He or she sees, what have I gone through in my life? What the master is saying, is it true or not? Swami has often said, the reason you are given this body, you are born, in fact, Kasturi Garu, Swami's translator, one of the most beautiful, blessed devotees to grace this ashram, he writes in his autobiography, Loving God, if you look at it, the first opening paragraph, he says, Baba says, we are born so that we are not born again. Baba says, We are born so that we are not born again. This is how he starts. In the first paragraph, it is there. Second line or so. Why? Now we hear this from Swami. We are born so that we are not born again. So a good listener, what he will do is he'll apply it to his life. And he'll analyze his life and see. How much ever I have strived in this world, have I really attained lasting happiness? Have the material and the objects of the world, all the relationships and the possessions I have had, all the name and fame that I have gained, have they given me lasting happiness? If not, what was I seeking through life? What is this life all about? What has each suffering tried to convey to me? What is each pain tried to convey to me? What does each pleasurable situation convey to me? What did the pleasurable situation convey to us? That I am very, very limited. The expiry date on me is very short. Very short. Pleasure comes and goes before you know. Pain stays little longer. But then it says, I have come here to remind you that I have been more in your life than pleasure. I have a major role to play in your life. Now, that is why great masters say, you must be in a position to welcome pain and suffering as well. Why? Because they are the best teachers. In pleasure, you are lost in the world. But when painful situation comes, there is a feeling that I should run away from this situation. There is a feeling that I should distance myself from pain and suffering. So that is a great teacher. So Bhagavan says you are born so that you are not born again. Which means what? From this analysis of my own life, I understand that my life has been a series of painful and suffering experiences and some pleasurable experiences. I have never got lasting happiness and joy from the life directly. Unless it was anchored in God. There is a story which Swami had acknowledged in the year 2007 and gave new meaning to it. I would like to share that story. There was a village in the state of Rajasthan. You know, in India, there is a state called Rajasthan where there are many desert lands, dry lands, desert lands. So there was a village in those desert lands where a family of three children, two sons and a daughter, and the father was there. The father was on his deathbed and he was about to pass away. So the three children were attending to him and eventually he passed away. Just before passing away, the father said, I have my will. I have written my will. I have given it to our village lawyer. So you go and meet him. That Mukhiya is there. He will take care. And then he passed away eventually. So the three children invited the Mukhiya, who was handling the law affairs of the village. He was not a professional lawyer, but he was handling the law affairs of the village. So he came with the will that the father had written and he read out the will in the presence of the three children and the family members. And there was big chaos and confusion. They started fighting. So a wise man was passing by because it's a desert region. He had a camel as his means of transport. So he was walking with his camel. And he saw this chaos and confusion happening in the village. So he called one of them and asked, what is happening here? So they described this whole event. And he said, oh, is it so? Let me have a look. So he called those three children and said, what is the problem? Why are you fighting? They said, no, our father's will has caused confusion. So the wise man said, what is the confusion? Can you explain? Are you not satisfied with his will? How the way he has distributed his wealth or something like that? He said, no. We are satisfied with the wealth that he had and what he has to give us. But the confusion is the way he divided it amongst the three of us, the three children. The father said that 50% should go to the eldest son. 50%, 1/2. 1/4 portion should go to the middle child. And 1/5 should go to the youngest daughter. So 1/2 to the eldest son, 1/4 to the middle son and 1/5 to the daughter. So the wise man said, okay, so are you upset with the way that this proportion was decided by him? They said, no, we are not upset because of that. Then what is the problem? See, the issue is, all that our father had were 19 camels. 19 camels. Now the eldest son has to get half of 19 camels. Now if there were 20 camels, we can divide it by 2 and say 10 camels. How do you divide 19 camels? 19 by 2 camels you cannot do. So they said, then how do you make 1/4 of 19? 1/5 of 19? Not possible. So this is causing confusion. We don't know how to resolve the situation. So then in that very, very difficult and confusing situation, the wise man was very cool. He said, that's all. Is this your issue? He said, yes, this is our issue. No problem. No problem. Be happy. Don't worry, he said. Take my camel and add to your lot. So he took that camel and added to the lot. Now 19 plus 1 became 20. Half of 20, 10 camels were given to the eldest son. 1/4 of 20, 5 camels were given to the middle son. 1/5 of 20, 4 camels were given to the daughter. 10 plus 5 plus 4, 19, and the wise man took back his camel and went away. When this story was narrated in Swami's presence, one of the elders was so happy listening to the story and the conclusion of the story that he told Swami, Swami, what a wonderful story this student has narrated. Swami said, what did you understand from the story? So the elderly devotee said, Swami, it is impossible to divide 19 by 2 and 19 by 4 and 5. So one camel got added and the division became easy. And finally the wise man took away his camel. What a wonderful way it happened. Swami said, that is not the message of the story. Division was not the message of the story, Swami said. He said that the one camel which was added to the 19 gave meaning to the whole scenario. Otherwise the scenario was just chaos, confusion and pain. What was happening in the village? Chaos, confusion and pain. This is a reflection of human life. Every human life goes through chaos, confusion and pain. Unless that one is added to the human life, there will not be clarity. Bhagwan said that one lends meaning to life. That one lends meaning, like it lent meaning to the division process here. Division should not be the focus of the story. The fact that the one lent meaning to life, and that one is God, and that one is me, Swami said. So if your life is centered around Swami, then life gains meaning. Otherwise it is just a mixture of pleasure, pain, chaos and confusion. So it has to be centered. How does it become centered? By becoming a good Shrota first. The first step of devotee told by Bhagavatam is Shravanam. In the Navavida Bhakti, 9 forms of devotion, what is it? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnusmaranam, Padasevanam, Vandanam, Archanam, Dasyam, Sneham, Atmanivedanam. This is the Navavida Bhakti, 9 forms of devotion. What is the first step for a devotee? Shravanam. So, a good listener is one who does not only listen, but he processes that information. So when Swami says you are born so that you should not be born again, apply it and see. What was the purpose of life? What did you strive for all your life? If it was for bliss, ananda, happiness, did you really gain it from the world? Or did you get it when you were immersed in the Lord? So Bhagavan says that once a devotee is completely immersed in the he or she loses themselves. Personal identity, individual identity vanishes. It is only in that state he is called a Jivan Mukta, where the Lord alone exists. There is no devotee left. In that state, he is called a Jivan Mukta. Jivan Mukta means what? Mukta means liberated. From what? Jivan. You are born so that you should not be born again. This is the purpose of life. Now when Bhagavan says this, a good Shrota, a devotee whose first step is to be a good listener, listens and analyzes with his or her own life in the background. Has it not happened to me? Is this not my own life's lessons? When they analyze, they realize. When they analyze, they realize the purport of the message of the Lord. When they realize the purport of the message of the Lord, when it is from your own practical experience, you know that yes, what the Lord is saying is true, then Nididhyasanam starts. How? Then you start practicing in your life. And the message becomes concrete. It becomes deeper and deeper, deeper and deeper, so that the real quality of a devotee starts manifesting. Living with God every day means to be, first step is to be a good Shrota. That is why in the 9-point code of content, I would like to again highlight, Swami said, daily reading of Sai literature. And we started this session with the point that Swami says, if you follow what routine he has said, if you carefully listen to him and do mananam and practice what he has said, that is enough sadhana. So as I was telling you, with the growth of this body, the so-called intellect was also apparently glowing, and I started asking, Swami, how is it possible? Great rishis do great sadhanas. When I started doing Shravanam Mananam of Swami's discourses, actually, I found that Bhagavan says, this prema, this love, which is essentially God itself, cannot be realized through any other means other than what is called Sarvarpita Bhavam. Sarvarpita Bhavam means complete total surrender. Like we just discussed, unless all our identity, aspirations, desires, everything is merged into the Lord, complete individual personality is merged into the Lord, and we don't exist anymore. Body will exist, but no identification exists here. This kind of mukti, Jivan Mukti, cannot happen. So what the Lord is saying, this Jivan Mukti Avastha itself is the realization of prema, and the ones who were able to do it were the Gopikas. He gives the example of Gopikas. You know, there is an incident which shows how they never had any identification to their own personality and desires and what they wanted. They didn't want anything for themselves. Krishna enacted a drama. One day he enacted a drama in such a way that he was suffering from severe headache, incurable headache. So Naradji, who is a great devotee of the Lord, he came to Dwaraka, saw the Lord in this state, and his heart was so disturbed. He said, Swami, how can I cure your headache? Please tell me, should I call the royal doctor? Lord Krishna said, no, nothing will work. This cannot be cured by any physician. So then Narada asked Krishna, Swami, then tell me, what should I do? Is there some way? I cannot see you suffer like this. Krishna said, yes, there is one way, but I don't know if it can happen. Narada asked, what is that way? Please tell me, I will make it happen. He said, see, the dust of the feet of my devotee is necessary. The dust of the feet of my devotee is necessary. I have to apply it on my head, then this headache will go. And Narada thought, oh my God, how sinful is this act? Can I place the dust of the feet of my leg on the Lord's forehead? What great sin I will incur. So he immediately devised a strategy and he said, let me go and ask Mother Rukmini and Satyabhama. He went and told, Lord is suffering from severe headache. He says the dust of the feet of the devotee can cure it. Can you please give your dust? So they both took two steps back and said, no. How can we do such a sinful act? The dust of our feet on the forehead of our Lord? No. Chichi, how can you even think of this? It's a very dastardly act. So we cannot do such things. It's a very sinful act. We will incur great sin. So Narada did not know what to do. So he went again to Krishna. Krishna was still suffering from headache. And Krishna said, you do one thing. You go to Vrindavan. There, no, my Gopikas are there. My Gopalas are there. You ask them. Then Naradji thought to himself, great jnanis are here who are also devotees. You know, there are four types of devotees. Arthis, Arthis, Artharthis, Jignasus and jnanis. Jnani bhaktas also apparently are not willing to give the dust off their feet. What will these ordinary milkmaids, you know, shepherds, what will they do? How can they have so much intelligence? This was going through his mind. But nevertheless, he went to Vrindavan. And as soon as he went there and told the Gopikas that Krishna is having headache and the only cure is the dust of the feet of his devotees, immediately they rushed, got saris, they laid the saris down on the floor and they all jumped onto it and bundled up one full pile of dust and gave it to Narada. I said, go and give it to Krishna immediately. So he said, no, I have a question. They said, don't delay. My Lord is in pain. What are you doing here? Rush, rush. He said, no, just answer this. Are you not scared that you will go to hell because of the sin that you are accumulating by giving the dust of your feet? They said, who cares if we go to hell or heaven? Only thing that is important to us is our Lord. Take this and rush. Don't delay. Don't commit the sin of delaying in reaching this dust to the Lord. Look at their attitude. See, great devotees like Gopikas do not proclaim their devotion. It is seen in their action. It is observed in the action. Why? Swami says that they had only okka manasu. Okka manasu means ekagratamu dhyanamu. Ekagratam means one-pointed mind, not many-pointed. Sometimes thinking about Swami, sometimes thinking about something else, sometimes some other thing. This is anekagratam. Ekagratam means one-pointedness. And what is that? Dhyanamu. Dhyanam means, in a very simple understanding, attention. To start with, first step in dhyana is attention. Swami says, if you don't have abhiruchi, avadhanamu cannot happen. Avadhanam means attention. Abhiruchi means liking, interests. If you don't like God, forget loving God, it's a very advanced step. If you don't basically like God, your attention won't go towards God. So Swami uses these two words, ekagrita and dhyana, to describe the state of mind of Gopikas. The Gopikas in fact tell Krishna's friend Uddhava, when he came to deliver the message of Krishna, he read out Krishna's letter to the Gopikas and said, and Swami writes very beautifully, just the way he tells us in his discourses, he says, Nenu mir intane ventane jantane unnano. I am always with you, in you, around you, above you. Why do you despair? I am all the time with you. You are living with God already. Why don't you recognize that? Why do you despair? So you do one thing. My friend Uddhava has come to convey a message on yoga. He will teach you about yoga. Yoga means not the physical exercises, about bhakti yoga, jnana yoga. So he has come to teach you on yoga. Why don't you learn from him? Was there in the letter. The Gopikas very humbly and in all simplicity they told the messenger of Lord Krishna, who was Uddhava, O Uddhava, you may have 10 minds. You know, Sant Surda sang very beautifully. I will not risk singing, but I will tell you the verse where he said, Udho man na bhayo das bees. Means, hey Uddhav, man na bhayo das bees. We don't have 10-20 minds like you. You are a great scholar and intellectual. Of course, this is a very contextual explanation. Please, I would like to add a disclaimer. Uddhavji is a great jnani. He is one of those who assimilated Krishna's teachings perfectly. So don't underestimate him. It's a very contextual explanation that is being given here to highlight the glory of the Gopikas. That's all. Uddhavji is very great. Very great means not only in scholarly parlance, but in anubhava jnanam. Anubhava jnanam means in direct experience of love and truth. He is a very great master himself, Uddhavji. But this is a context to explain the greatness of the Gopikas. And why Swami says it is enough to practice the way of life that He has given us, that sadhana is enough. Why He has said that is a revelation through the life of Gopikas. So they say, hey Uddho, man na bhayo das bees. We don't have 10-20 minds like you, means anekagra mind. Mind, you know, focusing on different aspects. We had only one mind, Uddhava. Ek manas. We had only one mind, and that Sham Sang Gayo. It has left with Lord Krishna. Now, how can the mind leave with Lord Krishna? Think about it. Can you take out your mind and give it physically? Can you do that? If you can, then why don't we do it? What it means here is, Bhagwan explains this state and says, Okka Manasu or Ek Manas means Ekagrita, means they perfectly still their mind. Ekagrita. And how did they offer it to Krishna? They did not offer it to the physical Krishna outside. Swami tells, in fact, in his discourse, that the Gopikas told Krishna, oh Krishna, do you think if you take a form and come to us, you can delude us? This form is there today, tomorrow you will vanish this form. I know that. Who? The Gopikas are telling Krishna. Today you are coming in this form, tomorrow you will make this form vanish. We know that. This is Swami's poem, by the way. I am explaining in English. But we know that you are not this form alone. Of course this form is you. But you are not only this form. We know that you are our Hridayavasi. We know that you are our indweller. How? You are our Atma Swarupa. This is how Swami tells in that poem. He says that Krishna, the Gopikas knew Krishna as the Antaryami Atma Tattva. Not only as physical. They used to play with the physical, but realized that He never left them actually. That is why Krishna confidently wrote in the letter, you already know that I am with you, in you, around you. Why are you despairing? Because they were doing this Leela. So the Gopikas had Okka Manasu, means one mind. What does it mean? Perfectly still and one-pointed, focused mind. And then the other aspect of the Okka Manasu, Bhagavan says, is Dhyanamu. Dhyanamu means, first step as we discuss, is attention. Where their attention was? On Atma Krishna. Krishna, who is Atma, or Rama, who is Atma, Atma Rama, as we say. The Gopika's attention was on Atma Krishna. That is where they directed the mind. The perfectly one-pointed, tranquil mind, they turned it towards the Atma Krishna, Krishna consciousness, and that mind completely merged with Krishna. They in fact say, now Uddhavji, we don't have a mind. Means they are amanaskas. Amanaska is a very elevated level of a sadhaka. Highest level before they attain perfect merger. They said, we are amanaskas, we don't have a mind that way. That has gone away with Krishna. How? The mind was merged into consciousness. How? Through ekagrita and dhyanamu. This is from Bhagavan's discourse. He says, okka manasu ante ekagratamu dhyanamu. Now please pay careful attention to this. Ekagra manas, Bhagavan says, is a sattvic state of mind. Sattvic state of mind. The mind has got three states. We are not talking about the quality of thoughts that come in the mind, but fundamentally mind, all of you have in your experience, has got three states. What is that? There is a tamasic state, which is the dull and the dreary mind. You know, many times you feel like daydreaming. You don't feel like doing any activity. You feel, Abba, enough. I don't want to do anything. The very dull mind, inactive mind, all of us have experienced at some point or the other. That state of mind is tamasic state of mind. Now there is another state of mind we all have in our experience. What is that? Rajasic state of mind. What is it? Anekagrita, Bhagavan says. He uses the word anekagrita, which means there are so many thoughts running in our mind and we are running behind each thought after the other. First state is a dull state of mind, tamoguna. Second state of the mind is superactive state of mind, rajoguna, where it's running behind so many thoughts, one after the other. Then there is a third state you might have experienced either in meditation, in Swami's presence, or after bhajans. What is that? Mind is in absolute peace and it is one-pointed. Ekagrita. So, ekagra manas, Bhagavan says, is a sattvic state of mind. Now, what is mind? Mind, Bhagavan says, is a bundle of thoughts. Now, where these thoughts come from? Very simple. Jaisa ann, vaisa man. Jaisa ann, the way your food is, vaisa man, the way, that way the mind is. Which means what? The subtlest essence of food that you consume is what becomes your mind. So, if you want to be like the Gopikas and surrender your mind to the Lord, first you need what is called as Okka Manasu, Ek Man, one mind. What is that one mind? One-pointed mind. Ekagrita. And Dhyanamu, two aspects are there. Now we are focusing on the aspect of Ekagrita. Ekagrita means sattvic quality of the mind. And how mind is formed? Through food. Jaisa ann, vaisa man. As is the food, so is the mind. How does the food enter us? Food enters our system through the mouth. But Bhagavan says it's not restricted. What we hear, what we see, what we smell, what we touch, all these are sensory inputs. Means they are food that is going through the senses. So they have to become sattvic. Now look around and see what a beautiful environment that Swami has created in Prashanthi Nilayam and in all samitis and in all Sai homes. All Sai homes fundamentally keep their house clean. All the inputs are pure. They ensure that what they hear, many devotees you go, 24 hours disco stream or bhajan stream will be going on Radio Sai. Why? Because they are inspired by Swami to listen to only good. So, first step Bhagavan says, do good, be good, see good, think good, feel good. This is the way to God. Which means what? All the inputs should be sattvic in nature. So, if the food input is sattvic in nature, jaisa ann, vaisa man. So, mind also will be sattvic. What is the quality of the sattvic mind? What is the quality? Ekagrita means one-pointed, still, tranquil mind is what is attained. Now, that is why if you see Swami's system here, Swami says, the way you have your food is very important. What you have in food is important, way you have is also important. This is living with God every day. What you have as food and way you have. So what you have should be sattvic and pure. The way you have, Bhagavan says, without offering it to God, you should not have. So first offer the food to God. Brahma Arpanam, Brahma Havir. Brahma Havir means what? This is a yajna that is happening. Havir means yajna, sacrifice. Like you have the Dashara yajna, which happens. So that is a yajna. What happens in a yajna? You have a Havan Kund or Yajna Shala which is built, isn't it? How is the Yajna Shala? If you pay careful attention, it has three steps on top. The traditional Yajna Shalas will have three steps on top, made of bricks. One, two, three levels. Actually, it is not only three levels. Traditionally, half a level is to be dug into earth. So you have three levels above, half a level below, into the earth, where actually the wood and other things which are meant to burn are placed at the base. So it is three and a half. In Hindi, if you say three and a half, you say saade teen. Saade teen. And wonderful masters of our Bharatiya tradition say, if you actually calculate the size of this body, it is saade teen haath, three and a half times the length of our arm. If you measure the length for a normal human body, if there are no abnormalities in it, then the length of the arm, if you measure and multiply it by three and a half times, will be height of the individual. Saade teen haath. Now, the Havan Kund which is made for yajna was constructed by whom? Can we have some answers? The Havan Kund, the Yajna's fireplace, is constructed by whom? By human beings. Yes? Three and a half hands, right? Three and a half units size, Havan Kund, as per the Rishi's instructions, constructed by human beings, all of us, now Dashara Yajnam happens like that. This Havan Kund, human bodies, 3.5 hands, constructed by whom? Who has given this human structure? It is God. So this human body is a creation of God. That Havan Kund which we make for Dashara is a creation of man. Which is superior? What is created by God or what is created by man? Now second aspect. How do you do the yajna? You light fire. Fire, how it is lit in the yajna? You take two wooden pieces and you create friction. They don't use matchsticks and lighters in yajna. We may see it in some places, but that is not the way it should be done. Traditional way is you have one base and one anvil, on like an anvil, and you have one rod on top, which is also made of wood. And they will create friction. So you would have seen in Dashara Yajna, one person holding the stick, one person putting pressure and another person churning the stick. Why? The friction creates the fire. Means the fire is man-made. In this Yajnashala, in this sacrificial place, called the human body, time to time fire is lit here. Yes or no? Morning it was lit, you had breakfast. Now it is beginning to be lit, you will have lunch. In the evening again it will be lit, you will have dinner. Isn't it fire? Don't you feel the heat? See, the quality of fire is heat and light. Yes or no? How do you know this is fire? Because when you are hungry, you feel heat. Isn't it? So heat means what? There is an element of fire there, though you can't see it with your eyes. But it has a fire nature. Fire element is there. Now who planted this element here? God. Now is this fire superior or that fire superior? Which man lit? Isn't this fire superior? So that is why in the shloka that we chant before food, Swami has included what? Aham Vaishwanaror Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashritaha. Means I am the sacrificial fire that digests the food in the name of Vaishwanara. My name is Vaishwanara in this body. I am the sacrificial fire that creates hunger and also digests the food. Praninam Deham Ashritaha. I am present in the body. Prana apana sama yuktaha pachamyannam chaturvidam. Four types of food I digest by the making use of prana and apanas, two types of vayus. What does it mean? This Havan Kund was created by a god. The fire is lit by God. He himself is the fire. That's what he says in Bhagavad Gita. Aham Vaishwanaror Bhutva. Means what? I am the Vaishwanara. Krishna is saying, means that is me, not only created by me, that is me, he is saying. Imagine now, in this Yajnashala, when we do Yajna in Dashara, can we put anything and everything into the Yajna? How careful we are, meticulous in selecting the purity of the, you know, items that go. We go to the forest, pick, pray to the plants, pick the twigs very carefully, clean it and keep. Get the purest cow's ghee for the Havan. So much effort for what? What was man-made? Why did the rishis make that? The rishis made that to remind us that the original Havan Kund is here. That is why all elements they have kept same. That is 3.5, this is 3.5. Here there is a fire, so there also they created fire. Here Havan Padarth. What does the Brahmarpanam say? Brahma Havir, Brahma Agnav, Brahman Ahutam. Ahutam means all that you put in the sacrificial fire. It is all what? Brahman. It is God, they are saying. That is why Annam Brahma. You should not waste food. You see in canteens, Annam Brahma, you should not waste food. Why? Because that God itself is the Brahma Padarth. That is to be put in the sacrificial yajna. So, why the rishis created that yajna and why do you take so much care to get every item to be put in the sacrificial fire should be pure, sacred. We have taken care of that, we forgot the original yajna. the rishis replicated this body, which is the original Havan Kund created by God, in the form of yajna, so that years later or eons later also, when we simpletons look at it, we know that what God was trying to say. God was trying to say that the original Havan Kund is here. So if we do this prayer with this understanding, Brahmarpanam, Brahmahavir. Why Brahmarpanam? For whom this Havan is being done? For Brahman, God who has taken this form. That is why we started with the shloka, Sarva Rupa Dharam Shantam. Sarva Rupa Dharam means God has taken all these forms. Swami's own words these are. When Swami was asked, Swami, who are you? He said, Sarva Rupa Dharam Shantam, Sarva Nama Dharam Shivam. Sarva Rupa Dharam means all these forms I have assumed. Means then for whom this yajna is happening? To Swami only, who is the Brahman. That is why it is Brahmarpanam. This yajna is for the Brahman. Brahmahavir. This yajna itself is Brahman. Brahmagnav. The fire here is Brahman. Brahman Ahutam, what I am consuming is also Brahman. Brahmaiva tena gantavyam Brahma karma samadhina, which means what? If I do this yajna in complete awareness that this is a Brahma yajna being offered to Brahman, it is being performed by Brahman, and I don't have any role to play in this. It is truth. Why? Again, as I said, a good shrota listener analyzes himself. How? Where the food that goes into this yajna, Brahma yajna, come from? It comes from the plants. Isn't it? How did the plants gain? How rice, wheat and all the vegetables, how did they gain the energy? They gained it from the sun. Now who is making the sun shine incessantly? You and me? Who has captured the energy of the sun in the plants? You and me? Who has converted the energy from the plants in terms of fruits, vegetables, rice and grains, when it goes into this mouth, who digests the food? You and me? If none of us have done all this process, who has done it? Some people decide to say it is cosmic intelligence, some people say energy, all of us know it is God or Swami. Isn't it? They're just different words for the same thing. Fundamentally, if you analyze your own life, Brahmarpanam, Brahmahavir, Brahmagnav, Brahmanahutam, Brahmaivatena Gantavyam, Brahma Karma Samadhina, means you attain the state of Samadhi. Attain means it is not an achievement. You recognize the state of Samadhi. When you attain the state of Samadhi, when your complete individual identity is merged in God, not outside, inside. When your complete mind, like the Gopikas, is merged in God. For that you need ekagratamu and dhyanamu. Means attention is required. And ekagrata. For ekagrata you need pure food first. How pure food can come? If every day, 3 times a day we do this yajna with this understanding that this is Brahma yajna. Right from the creation of the yajna kunda, the fire in the yajna kunda, all the material that is coming for the yajna kunda, everything is created by God. It is running by God. It is digested by God. It is removed by God. Cleaning up also God only does. What do you do in that? So with this awareness, if you have food 3 times a day, food anyway we enjoy 3 times a day, but if you do it with this awareness, it becomes a Brahma Kriya. Brahmaivatena gantavyam Brahma Karma. Brahma Karma means becomes Brahma Kriya, it becomes divine action, not human action. If we are able to convert our life in this way, would it not be living with God? This is created by God, fire is created by God, the food that is coming in front of us is God itself. All not only created by God, God himself became this. That is what Swami is saying. If we have food 3 times a day with this awareness, then are you not living with God? If you give Abhishekam to this Yajna Kunda, can you not think that you are giving Abhishekam to Swami? Why? Swami is the indweller. This is like the temple of God. Body is a temple. So every time you have bath, you are giving Abhishekam to Swami. You are cleaning Swami's sanctum sanctorum. And the temple should be maintained like a temple. Means what? All the feelings and the qualities you maintain, you have to take care. You cannot play any kind of music in temple, isn't it? Do you go to a temple and play whatever music or whatever talks you want? No. You're very careful. No, let's play Gayatri. Let's play Sai Gayatri, or let's play Rudram, or let's play some other sacred chant. Why you become conscious in the temple? Because you know that the sanctity of the space has to be maintained. So if we become aware that this is the most sanctified, why? Even the temple was constructed by human beings. This, who has constructed this temple? If we function again with this awareness, then body begins to reflect that it is already a temple of God, whether you want or not. But if you treat it as sea, there are, even in the world you see, there are very good temples, powerful temples, and when you go, you know the experience, the vibration is so beautiful, and there are temples that are dilapidated, unattended to. Do you go to those temples? What is the difference? Maintenance. Consecration and maintenance. The good temples are where consecration was done properly. It is maintained very clean and clear, and every day people come and offer their worship. So Swami says, if you recognize your body to be such a temple and you maintain it accordingly, now no need to explain further. Just the way you maintain a temple, maintain your body. All the sacredness, cleanliness, purity, both inside, outside, what needs to be taken care, take care. Then the body, which is already a temple of God, will resonate as a temple of God, will reflect as a temple of God, will be experienced as a temple of God. Now, when there is a temple in sanctum, is God there or not? So if He is there, then are you not living with God? So living with God every day is only to recognize what Swami has already taught us, nothing new. So when He said, just follow whatever way of life I have given you, was He wrong? Not intellectually. Analyze this and see how real this is. So, with these few words, I know the Vaishvanara is already up and going. And this is not man-made. This is God Himself who is there. So, if we are able to transform our life in this way, we can attain what is called as Chitta Shuddhi, purification of the mind and heart. And Chitta Shuddhi leads to the state of mind, sattvic state of mind, which is called Ekagratamu, which was the first qualification which the Gopikas had. The second qualification is Dhyanamu. Dhyana means fundamentally attention. And Bhagwan says, for attention, first you should have liking. Priyam Modam Pramodam. With this I will conclude. The three words which Swami uses, Priyam means you should have liking to God. Then your attention will be on God. Now you are purifying your mind through all this that we discuss now. Through daily practice. Nothing extra. Now whatever we discussed was bath and food. Isn't it everyday activity? So anything extra you need to do? No. Then rest of the time what you do? Your work. So that work you consider it as worship. See, Swami, in fact, you know the famous story when Narada asked Lord Narayana, who is your greatest devotee? He was expecting that Lord Narayana will tell you. But Lord Narayana said, no, see, that farmer you see, he is my greatest devotee. So, Narada went to inquire, how is this possible? I chant the Lord's name all the time. How can the farmer be the greatest devotee? So, he went, and when he saw there, the farmer only chants four times. Before he does any work, once he chants the name of the Lord. That's all. And he's doing his work, but he does his work perfectly, with complete commitment. So, Narada was wondering, what is this? So, he goes back to Lord Narayana and says, how, Lord, you are saying he is your greatest devotee? He chants only four times your name. I chant incessantly, every breath is resonating with Om Namo Narayanaya. Then, how can you say? Then the Lord says, okay, can you do a small thing for me? He says, yes, anything for you, Lord. He gives him a bowl of oil filled to the brim. Says, put it on your head and go around the world and come back and report to me. One condition, not even one drop should spill. So he says, not a big deal, I'll do it. So Narad Rishi went around and came back, and very proudly he said, Lord, I have not spilled even a single drop of oil as you commanded me. Narayana said, oh, very good. Now let me ask you, how many times did you think of me in this process? Narada reflected and said, none, zero. Say, see, that farmer, four times he thought of me. But the count is not important here. Each of the time, he assumed a very strong conviction, a bhavana, that this work is an offering to God and it is God who is performing this work. Why? Just as we discussed, the human body cannot do any actions without energy. Energy comes from food, and we know how the whole food is got. Sun, plants, digestion, excretion, circulation. None of these processes we do. Which means what? It is Brahma karma. It is God's doing. It's not ours. It's very practical. Please observe and say, if any of you are performing these things, let me know. I want to analyze and see. So it is Brahma karma. Means with complete conviction that it is God alone who is acting. The farmer, in taking the name, what he was doing was in conviction. He said, Lord, you are doing this action, and this action is being done for your pleasure. And that was done. So four times they were just not taking the name of Lord alone. Those were statements of absolute conviction, where he declared that these are Brahma karmas, and that is why that farmer was the greatest devotee of the Lord. So, bath, food, and all works over, what else your day is filled with? So, living with God every day means this. So, this leads to ekagritamu, and if you are convinced that it is Brahma karma, means your dhyanamu, your attention goes. Priyam means liking, modam means whatever you like, you put an effort to acquire it, isn't it? You like a gulab jamun, it is there in our North Indian canteen. You see, oh, somebody coming out with gulab jamun, you ask, oh, wonderful gulab jamun, where did you get? They say, North canteen. So now priyam has come, liking. Then what you do? Modam. Modam means what? You take your wallet, go to the canteen, buy the gulab jamun, pay the amount and sit on the table. This is modam, means putting effort. It's very essential. Without effort, if you simply say gulab jamun, it will not manifest in front of you. So you put the effort, that is called modamu. Then you take that gulab jamun and put in your mouth. Aha. Now that priyam has led to bliss, the liking. The liking of gulab jamun has resulted in experience of happiness and bliss. That is called pramodamu. In the same way, one has to develop taste for God, means liking for God. Then you have to put effort, constant effort, to realize God in your day-to-day life. And then when that happens, you will experience bliss. It is guaranteed. But you have to do this. So what Gopikas did? Ekagrata and dhyana. For dhyana, priya, moda, pramoda is basic requirement. Once you develop more and more love for God, and you recognize from your experience that this world is worthless in front of the bliss that God is, you know, this is again the language of somebody who sees God separate from the world. But you have to live by your experience. If your experience is you see God separate from the world, you have to acknowledge and progress from there. You should not assume anything. Assumption will lead to folly. So you should not assume anything there. So actually what will be the experience? One day you will come to experience that there is nothing other than God. But let it be in your experience. Then only you know it is bliss. Let bliss be a reality that you are, not a perception or not an imagination in your mind. Let bliss be the reality that you are. And that is what Swami often tells us. So, ekagrata and dhyanamu were the two secrets for the gopikas, for sarvarpita bhavam. Sarvarpita bhavam means, here bhava does not mean feeling and emotion. Bhava means a stable, fixed presence. A stable, fixed. Swami says, nischala samana chittudai. Nischala, unwavering, pure. Samana chittudai means in equal-minded state. It is perfectly stable and still. That is the bhava. In that bhava, what? Sarvarpita means complete conviction in direct experience is there. That everything is divine action, everything is divine leela. Let that be your experience, not just your thought and imagination. With these few words, seeking Bhagwan's blessing on all of us, that we may all grow in love, in realizing love as our true self, our nature, just as the Gopikas did, just as Mirabai did, just as Sant Tukaram and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. They lived with God in everyday life. Jai Sairam.
Sing that.